Thank you very much. Hello, my name is Johan Hadland, and you can find me as jherland on GitHub, Mastodon, LinkedIn, elsewhere. I'm a Norwegian, but I'm currently living in Delft in the Netherlands, and I work as a developer productivity engineer at Twig, which is part of the larger Modus Create software consultancy. We help our clients solve hard problems with open source software, and we contribute back to the open source community whenever possible. Today, I will talk to you about a somewhat obscure topic that lies between the dark arts of the compiler toolchains, debuggers, and executable binary formats. For the average developer, I suspect these areas are often associated with a certain amount of black magic. Certainly, I know that I had worked for many years as a C and C++ developer without ever encountering today's topic as a possibility. I should start by saying that I have not invented any of the features or things that I'm presenting here. I merely stumbled onto this while trying to improve debug builds at a client. And I ended up writing a blog post about it to shed some light on what's going on here, and this talk is based on that blog post. So what am I talking about today? I will give you a practical introduction to debug fission, also known as split dwarf, where dwarf is the name for the standard debugging data format used on Linux and most other Unix systems. This talk is limited to L files on Linux, and we will be using GCC and the Golden Linker. LLVM Clang works with debug fission too, and there are also other modern linkers that support the things covered here. A related topic that I will not cover here is that of compressed debug symbols, but there are some links here if you're interested. So let's quickly go through the basics. What are debug symbols? In short, given the classic Hello World program, it's the difference between this and this. On the left-hand side, we build with default compiler options, and on the right-hand side, we pass G to GCC in order to build with debug symbols. On the left-hand side, the debugger is not too helpful. Although it knows where the main function is and we can set a breakpoint on it, it is not able to give us much more help. On the right-hand side, however, GDB can tell us what the main function, where it's located, on line 4 in hello.cpp, and we can even get source code listings. The debug symbols are what provide these helpful links or references that map the machine code currently being executed back into the higher level source code concepts like variables and functions with file and line numbers. However, debug symbols take up a lot of space. In the build without debug symbols, our toy executable is only about 8 kilobytes large, but the debug symbols add almost 300% to the original size. So what's actually being added to the executable? We can use readelf with sections to look at our two executables, and we will see that a bunch of new sections that are called debug something have been added to the bigger executable. These sections contain these debug symbols that the debugger can use to provide extra help when debugging. So what's the problem with these debug symbols? Well, they not only take up a lot of space, they also take extra time. Time to generate the debug symbols in the first place, but also, as we'll see, time to copy them from the initial object files through the intermediate build artifacts and into the final executables. Not to mention that this extra duplication throughout the build process means that enabling debug symbols in a build can dramatically increase the total space needed. In the end, you need to consider the benefit of debug symbols versus their cost. In other words, how often do you actually need debug symbols versus how much does it cost to build with them? And very often, a project will choose to build without debug symbols by default, and then it's up to the developer to request a build with debug symbols when needed. But then, also in many cases, you don't know that you need debug symbols until after the build is complete and the release has been deployed. So let's continue by looking at stripped executables briefly here. Stripping executables is often done as part of a release build in order to make the smallest possible release artifact. We can see that applying stripped or executable with debug symbols creates a stripped executable that is even smaller than the executable built with default options. But the result is completely unusable in the debugger, of course. This time, GDB doesn't even know that there is a main function, and if I want to set a breakpoint, I need to use hard-coded addresses. But GDB does have a trick up its sleeve, because if we have access to the unstripped version of the same executable, then we can supply the unstripped executable to GDB with the symbol file command. GDB will now use that unstripped executable to basically make sense of the stripped executable that is running on the CPU, and we get our debugging comforts back. We can take this one step further and add a debug link into the script executable that references the file that contains the debug symbols. In this case, the debug link only adds 96 bytes to the script executable, and when this debug link is present, GDB will automatically follow it to find the debug symbols, and we get the debugging we want. So maybe the solution is to build with debug symbols and then keep both the unstripped and the stripped executable. We can then distribute the stripped executable, and as long as we can retrieve the corresponding unstripped executable when we need to debug, we can get the best of both worlds. This does sound like a good idea at first. we get the smallest possible release artifact, and as long as we don't lose track of the corresponding unstripped executable, we also get the debugger's help when we need it. However, it's not completely without drawbacks. In order to have both the unstripped and stripped version of the same executable, we must first build the unstripped version. And as we saw before, building everything with debug symbols is very expensive. Then, only at the end of the build process, can we strip the executable and make the final release artifacts. This ends up on the critical path in our build graph. For any change we make to the source code, we must now rebuild the unstripped executable and then strip it. If we end up not actually using these debug symbols for most builds, then it can be very hard to justify this build time cost. So to make this trade-off more interesting, we should try to decrease the overall cost of building with debug symbols. So what we really want to do here can be summed up in two questions. Number one, can we somehow split off debug symbols while we are compiling? And number two, can we still keep the separate debug symbols around for debugging time? So let's finally talk about debug fission. At compile time, you can supply the gsplit dwarf option. And now, in addition to the regular object file, you will also get an accompanying .dwo file. Compared to the original object file, we can see that around 2/3 of the data has been moved into the DWO file, and 1/3 remains in the new object file. Together, the total overhead is about 4% over the old original object file. We can look closer at the new object file with readelf debug dump, and it shows that there are now references from this object file to sections inside the accompanying DWO file. And these are even loaded automatically by readelf. So it seems that the gsplit dwarf option has moved most of the debugging information from the object file into the separate DWO file and put in references instead. When it comes time to link the final executable, the linker now has to handle an object that is only 1/3 of the original size. This ultimately results in smaller executables and considerably faster link times. So let's go ahead with linking. There are no special link options needed for debug fission per se, but of course we do need to use a linker that supports it. Here we're using Gold. This new hello.split executable is equivalent to the previous unstripped executable. The only difference is that it is based on an object that was built with gsplit dwarf. Indeed, if we run readelf debug dump on the executable, we can see that the linker has carried forward the references to the DWO file that was created at compile time. Although not strictly necessary for debug fission, there is a useful link option that is worth mentioning here, and that is GDB index. It is not easy to find good documentation on this option, but its main objective seems to be to speed up GDB when loading the executable and its debug symbols, in effect trading link time for debugging time. When we use this, we see that we actually save over 8 kilobytes in the final executable. If we look at what happened to the ELF sections, we find that 3 of the debug sections in the executable have been replaced by a much smaller GDB index section. I'm guessing here, and I'm sure someone in the room can tell me later what's going on, but I'm guessing that there was some duplication between the remaining debug information in the executable and in the DWO file, and with this option, we are able to eliminate this duplication at link time. So let's take a closer look at the DWO file that we generated. Here we have only one, but in a larger project, you would naturally have one DWO file per compilation unit. And a given executable might have anywhere between a few to several thousand compilation units. Can we somehow consolidate this into a better debug package so that we don't have to carry all of these DWO files around with us? Yes, we can. There is a tool called DWP that works like a linker, but only for debug information. The best way to run this is with the exec option. DWP will then look at the DWO references in the given executable and consolidate all those DWO files into a single DWP package. We can then remove all the DWO files, and when we run GDB on the executable, GDB is clever enough to find the DWP package with the same base name as the executable, and debugging still just works automatically. Finally, we have accomplished debug fission. What we have at this point is an executable that we can easily debug, and it's only slightly larger than a strict executable. Most of the debug information is now in a separate debug package that we only need to have available when we need to run the debugger. And we achieve this by splitting off the debug information already at compile time and linking it separately from the main executable. Now, let's move on to how we can enable debug fission in higher level build systems. After all, very few of us build our projects by invoking the compiler and linker directly. We'll look at CMake first and then briefly at Bazel. So here is a minimal CMake configuration for our toy project. We declare a minimum CMake version, a project name, and we add our executable and the sources it is based on. When we build this with CMake, we will quickly discover that CMake by default builds without debug symbols, and it also uses a default linker that does not support debug fission. So we fix those, two things by adding fuseld equals gold as a link option, and by telling CMake that we want to use the debug build type. The next thing we need to do is to pass the options needed for debug fission. This tells CMake to pass the same compiler and linker flags that we saw previously. Finally, we get to the tricky part. How do we tell CMake how to link together the DWO files into a DWP package? There is currently no built-in logic to do this in CMake, but here is a workaround. The workaround is explained in more detail in the blog post, but in short, we're extending the default executable action in CMake with a custom command that generates the debug package that accompanies each executable. There is an open issue on the CMake bug tracker requesting better support for debug fission, and someone actually added a comment there referencing my blog post. In that comment, they referred to this as a hacky workaround and kind of fragile, and I cannot say that I actually disagree with them. Having official support for this in CMake would make things much smoother. Let's move on to Bazel. Here, the story is fortunately a lot simpler. Bazel supports debug fission since version 6, and it works as long as the underlying toolchain advertises this per object debug info feature. And with this in place, you would then pass fission equals yes, either via the command line or in your Bazel RC configuration file. The DWP package is built separately but by requesting the executable target name, but with a .dwp appended. And then I've done a small experiment here. I have to admit that this was done on the by building the LLVM project. I know this is the GCC DevRim, sorry for that. But this was the one project that I found online where it was easy to generate a comparison. They have a flag in their build configuration to enable this. And I'm basically doing three builds, a release build with no debug symbol, that's our baseline, a debug build, a regular build with debug symbols, and then a fission build with debug symbols and debug fission enabled. The blog post has the absolute numbers and much more details, but I'll only do a rough comparison here. The darker blue shows the cost of the debug build without debug fission. The lighter blue is with debug fission enabled. For overall build times, the debug build takes almost 40% longer than the release build. The fission only takes 25% longer. If we include the install time, things look even worse for the debug build. And I didn't really understand this at first because the install phase of LLVM is almost purely copying files from A to B. So why does it take so much longer with a debug build? It is actually purely down to the size of the artifacts. A debug build takes 15 times as much space as a release build. And you'll notice that I had to resort to a logarithmic scale here to fit it into the slide. Now, the debug symbols do take up a lot of space, but most of this enormous overhead is not due to a single copy of the debug symbols. Rather, the debug symbols are copied from object files into intermediate archives and from there into the final executables. When we enable fission, that size goes down a lot to five times. And the numbers are similar for the installed artifacts. Anyway, what can we conclude from this comparison? Debug symbols take up a lot of space, of course, but the real space overhead has less to do with debug symbols and more to do with the amount of times things are copied. When we use debug fission, we can eliminate much of this duplication, and simply by reducing the wasted space, we can also improve the build time significantly. So with that, we reach the larger conclusion of this talk. Debug fission can save you both time and space at the cost of some added complexity, especially if debug fission is not already supported in your build system. Is it worth it? It depends, as always. If we compare debug fission to building an unstripped executable and then distributing the stripped version, the stripped plus unstripped will offer the smallest release size. No matter what you do, the executable with debug fission will be somewhat larger. But the stripped plus unstripped will also be the least efficient way to do your build. First, you must make a full debug build, and then you must strip that in order to generate the release. So if you struggle with this overhead, then looking at debug fission can be a really valuable investment. So that's it for me. Thank you for listening. If you think that this talk rather should have been a blog post, then you're absolutely right. Here's the blog post. You can find everything in this talk, plus even more details, side quests, and links to more resources that I couldn't fit into here. More generally, on the Twig blog, you can also read about all the other things that Twiggers are up to. And if you want to learn more about Twig or Modus Create, there are links for those. If you want to reach me, I'm Jay Herland on GitHub, Mastodon, LinkedIn, and elsewhere. And with that, you can always find me afterwards if you have questions or want to discuss more.